Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It is 4/8/2024, Eclipse Monday, Fans First Sports Network, Andy P, Big G, back in the building on the Level Up College Football Podcast, Fans First Sports Network. You can watch us live on YouTube, listen to us on audio, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you can check it out. You can get to me and my boy Andy P. Hey, man, before we get to the script, we thank all y'all for rocking with us for sure. But I can't get this thing jumping off unless I got my boy Andy P in here, man. What is crack-a-lacking, Andy? What's been going on with you, bro?
You know, had to spend some time on the injured list. Got a little of those seasonal sicknesses coming around, but we're back. We're able to podcast again, ready to get back on this. And it's been a busy couple of weeks of college football news because, again, man, like, this stuff just doesn't stop. This has been probably one of the busiest off seasons that I can remember in terms of like actual news about the sport. And I think that just is a testament to how much everything is still changing around us. Like, this is probably going to be the way it is for a couple of years until things really settle in the sport. Then we can talk about, you know, the players and the coaches and everything, but we still got like big picture stuff that is moving and changing, which is, again, wild that we're in April and it's been 3 or 4 months of this since the national championship game. Every couple of weeks, there's a new thing that drops.
Man, it can't stop and it won't stop, man. You know, that's the deal, man. It can't stop and it won't stop. So, and breaking news for all y'all, and before we get into our topics, Dallin Hayden hit the transfer portal for the Ohio State Buckeyes. And I sent Andy that, and Andy was like, holy crap, running back for Ohio State University was supposed to be the heir apparent with Quinshon Jenkins and Travion Henderson, hit the portal, and I'm hearing rumors from my inside source. He might be headed to Ann Arbor with Tony Alford. I'm hearing it. I'm hearing that this kid could end up in Ann Arbor. So, man, it's going to be crazy. But anyway, we got to do the show. We got to get to the topics. Man, first topic, bro. Like we said, me and Andy was on this a minute ago, bro. We was on this one, right? And it's coming to fruition. The Super League concept that people are floating out there that can fix college football. A 60-team league with 14 teams making the playoffs from the 60-team league. And you don't have no more SEC, no more ACC, no more Big Ten. It's just called the Super League, right? Andy, people are talking crazy saying this thing's going to work. And we floated it out there that we were saying that this is what was coming, but bro, this might be a reality within 2 years. So your thoughts on the possible 60 team league where they kill all this mess and saying, we're just going to push everybody all into one.
I mean, it's really interesting that they jumped to this so quickly. I thought that there'd be a few layers of things that would happen before we got here. Just because so much of the college football power comes from these schools getting in with conferences and then these conference heads having power. So if this were to happen, like, you'd be looking at a bunch of, you know, admin people not really having jobs anymore because their entire ethos is like, I am the guy in charge of these X number of schools. And that obviously doesn't really exist in the Super League. And whenever you talk about like removing livelihoods from people who are like at that level, like, things typically don't happen so quickly. So that's why I was surprised the Super League came forward. But it really is all about the television revenue and how things kind of work with the largest potential payout happening as quickly as possible. And that's and that's where I think that this really goes, is that we're going to talk about the ACC in a bit, but we're getting to a point where there's just not a reality where these conferences can hold it together. And so it then becomes like, look, if I'm one of the bigger schools, I want to get my large payday, and I'm getting that in the SEC. But Vanderbilt's also cashing that same level of SEC check.
Who's trash?
Right. So at the end of the day, like, you've got inequities across the board, and the Super League is how you can create an inequitable structure, but wrap it up under the veil of competitive balance. And that's where, and that's what we saw happen. Like, again, like, I'm going to pull in my bag and pull out the soccer analogy. Like, we see this all the time in soccer. Like, the EPL, the English Soccer League, the biggest soccer league in the world, the top five teams are the top five teams because the payout structure is tiered that, look, if you finish XYZ, you get way more money than the teams lower in the standings. And I think that that's where this Super League comes into play, because you can say, look, half the pot is going to be performance-based. The other half is going to be TV revenue-based, which is where you guarantee that your big schools are always going to get the most money because they'll always draw in the most eyes. And then also reward performance. And then the power schools like Ohio State, Georgia, Alabama that perform year in, year out, they create this upper class at the top of the Super League. It's all absolutely ridiculous that we're talking about college sports like this. But again, like, this is happening because we are moving further and further away from trying to pretend like college sports are amateur sports anymore, at least on the football side. Like, we are moving to the point of saying, like, look, this is basically semi-professional football. And we've known this forever.
Yeah.
It's just about legally, like, are we going to finally shred this and just say, like, nah, football's its own beast and all of the other sports can exist in the true amateur setting.
Yeah, Andy, this feeds the narrative that we've been saying for months now, that the NC2A is cooked concerning collegiate football, right? But it also is being pushed because they're seeing how lucrative these NIL deals are for these kids, man. And it's getting to the point to where you're not just getting a bag, you're getting futures. Like, I got some guys who's tied into that foundation thing and a couple of other NIL big-time pots for Ohio State. Bro, and I'm hearing some of the deals that these kids is getting. Listen, Matthews, the kid, the corner, who's not even going to probably start this year. Espinosa and Burke's going to start. He flat out told him, I need a mil or I'm out of here. I'm hitting the portal. And guess what they got him?
A million.
Oh, he got his money. So I'm saying that if the schools, they're throwing the money around like it's Monopoly money right now. So you have to move to something. I'm not going to say necessarily 60, because that would just be nuts. 60 means you got the ACC, the SEC, the Big Ten, and the Big 12 pushed into one. I don't know about that, but I could see two conferences. I could see. Maybe a 32 team, like sort of like the NFL model, and split like that. Your thoughts, man? Because like I said, the money is just like the NC2A's cooked.
Yeah, and this has been the NCAA's problem the entire time, is that they basically sit over top of all of these sports, and they have no power over schools to reel them in on this spending. To say, look, Ohio State, don't give this kid a million. Because otherwise, it means that everybody else is going to have to pay $1 million, and that's going to speed things up. Like, they just, the Super League allows you to then put guardrails on things like spending and player compensation through legal means, whether it's a collective bargaining agreement, whether it's employment contracts, whether it's turning scholarships into legally binding contracts. You have ways of doing that the NCAA doesn't allow for. And I think that's where you and I both have kind of been so bullish on this happening, because all of these things that go into running a program and running an athletic department cannot continue to exist in the Wild West anymore. Like, I remember I was listening to another podcast, Split Zone Duo, and they were kind of talking about how Ohio State has really corporatized its athletic department, and they needed to do that because otherwise You've got stuff like what's happening to call out like an Ole Miss, where you need to have a football coach who's essentially the guy running the spreadsheets and handing out the money himself. And that's what, you know what that means? Less time coaching, less time working on X's and O's, less time working with his staff and coming up with the actual football part of it. And I think that this is where I actually, at my core, I don't think this is good for the game, but I do think that there is a silver lining here where we are going to stop pretending like these football coaches are CEOs. And like for a long time, this idea of the CEO coach was a really prevalent thought. When the reality is that Saban is in the lab, in the coaching room, on the whiteboard, like nobody's business. And he's one of the best at it. And that is where he's at his best. And so if you are a big time college football program, your advantage should not be that you have a CEO coach who oversees everything and has an army of people to do his job. Your advantage should be is that you let those coaches do the coaching and you hire someone else to run everything else. And I think, again, I'll continue to use Ohio State because you're obviously familiar with them, but I think that they did this the best this year, hiring a guy like Chip Kelly, who doesn't want to be the CEO. Chip Kelly wants to sit in a whiteboard, come up with the weirdest offensive formations that he possibly can, test, tinker, adjust, game plan. That is where Chip Kelly is going to be at his best, and Ohio State was able to offer him that opportunity to do so. So I think that
at a head coach's salary, Andy.
Exactly. But again, like bringing this back around, like you need the money to pay Chip Kelly that head coach's salary for it. Where do you get that? You get that from TV revenue. You get that from your boosters. That's where the Super League comes in. And I think Afton is, you know, Afton and Tim in the chat are talking about it in a really good way. And Big G, I'm curious to your thoughts here. It's like, look, 60 is too many. So the number is probably 30 or 32. And so the question becomes, one, do you try to just get the 32 biggest names, which means that you're probably going to be geographically isolated to just the Midwest and the Southeast, and you're going to lose the Northeast, you're going to lose the Southwest, and you're going to lose the Northwest, or do you try to like regionally balance this out and have some kind of promotion relegation system where teams can get play their way up into the Super League and lose their way out of the Super League if they don't perform year after year after year?
I to be honest, I don't know if the 60 number is going to get it. So what, 16 times 4 is what, 64? I think it's got to be set up with 64. And I think you do regions. You do 16 in each region. 16 in the South, 16 in the East, 16 in the Midwest, and 16 in the West. The top allocated programs, and you break it up like that. So you got a, it looks like an NC2A tournament bracket, and you get cross-referencing as far as teams playing from the West versus the East. But those teams, and like how you say, then a team's able to show, okay, we have the capital. We're a land-grant institution. We're able to back education because supposedly the kids are still there, even though eventually we know, Andy, they're going to be employees. And then say, okay, these kids are here to do one thing and one thing only. Get their education, finish up their education, and play football. And if you do it like that, then you get a bigger opportunity to spread the wealth, per se, and put teams in position to where you just won't see college football die. Because what's happening, what a lot of people don't know, is on those lower tier schools, like the region I'm from, Findlay and Bluffton, you know, those are known, University of Findlay, Bluffton University, they're known universities in the state of Ohio. They're merging into one school because they know that they don't have the capital to do what they need to do anymore. That would have been unheard of 10 years ago. So the next look is going to be, you're going to get your Bowling Greens and Toledo's merged into one school, right? And then, so when does that stop? And so that's why I say that you have to get the 16 and set the bar and set the parameter. Okay, this is what the expectations are. Land grant, NIL, all these things, if you're going to jump in, and then we start adding. But I think that they could do a good job with 16 teams per region. South, East, Midwest, West. That's my opinion, Andy. Your thoughts on that, bro?
No, I actually really like that idea because you bring up something that I think is really lost in this conversation. And I got lucky enough to go to a sports analytic conference, Sloan, back in February. And one of the panels was about where college is going and like how all of this is changing. And Val Ackerman, who was the commissioner of the Big East, was on this panel along with the athletic director of UCLA. And it was really funny because, like, you know, Val Ackerman is up here talking like, look, we don't really have these problems because basketball is this really self-contained sport. It's very affordable for both men's and women's. Mm-hmm. You can have a lot more schools invest decent money, but not an insane amount of money, and get that national exposure that you want from being a big-time college football program. And so I think the biggest difference between the college football playoff D1 level and the NCAA national championship game, which is taking place tonight as the culmination of March Madness, the biggest tournament in the year, is that the NC2A gets revenue from March Madness. The NC2A does not get any revenue from the college football playoff.
Facts.
The playoff is so separate. And at this point in time, it's why it makes sense and why we're having all these different football conversations, because I think the Super League essentially just becomes the college football playoff league. Now, what does that mean for every other university, like what you're talking about with like these smaller schools, these MAC schools, these schools that get left out? I think that this allows you to potentially expand the rest of the college football playoff infrastructure that right now only exists for the D2 level. That is incredibly compelling football, but is a larger tournament that the NC2A controls entirely. And that is where you go back to the true root of like, hey, this is going to be an amateur sport. These football teams are going to be smaller roster sizes. It's going to be more focused on coaching. It's going to be more focused on playing regional games and then getting into this larger national tournament where you play against other smaller schools. But I think that expanding that tournament and letting the college football playoff be its own thing is the only real way you kind of split this baby of saying like, look, I want to watch the big, huge land grant schools play against each other, but I also want there to be college football on these smaller campuses. I think that's the only way you do it. And I think that that's ultimately like, if I'm sitting here as like head of the NCAA, and I'm like, why am I letting this all happen? It's because at the end of the day, that's the only way that I am getting rid of this like football monster that consistently threatens to realign my conferences and creates my headaches for me. But I also still have a future football revenue stream. And I would not be surprised to see that that is kind of where this goes in like 10 years, where we have the Super League, which is semi-professional football, and then collegiate amateur football, which is this tournament style with all of the other smaller schools.
Man, big facts. Great information, Andy. Listen, y'all, we're going to pause for a second because we got to play some bills and get a word from our sponsor. If you're watching us live on YouTube, just give us a little second. We got to stick a commercial in, get an ad word from our partners. If you're listening to us live on audio, make sure you check out the Level Up podcast on Fans First Sports Network with Andy P and Big G, because we're talking big time college football stuff on this show. So give us a pause, give us like 10, and we'll be right back after the commercial ad on the Level Up podcast on Fans First Sports Network. And we're back. Fans First Sports Network, Level Up podcast. Andy, we've been texting back and forth, private chat stuff, man, about stuff that happened for the last 2 weeks, man, because it's just been so much. So, you know, this is something else. I mean, listen, I can't even get – let me get my G-Stradamus. I'm going to get an Andy Stradamus. Andy Stradamus signed, too, for the G-Stradamus. We told everybody, man. We told everybody that this subject was coming, bro. Clemson then jumped in a lawsuit with Florida State. They in officially, like not no propaganda, not no guessing, like saying it's gonna happen. Clemson is in the lawsuit with Florida State, man. They trying to bust the ACC clean up down to the white meat, Andy. So because they won out, because what we just was talking about with the Super Conference, this is about money. So Andy, how much steam do you see with this? Because I'm hearing that right now, they don't even want it to get to litigation. They don't even want to get it to discovery. Like, they just want to cut a deal and make a deal for the money. And then because the ACC's like, you're not going to leave and walk away and leave us empty-handed. We're not going for it. Right. So, Andy, how much reality you say with this, bro? Your thoughts about Clemson joining in for real?
The problem with both Clemson and Florida State's argument is something that we've talked about a lot of times, which is where are you going to go? Like, this tactic makes sense 5 years ago, before all of the realignment happened and where conferences didn't care as much about regional lines in that first wave of expansion. Now you're in a spot where you've got to get into the Big Ten or the SEC. And while the Big Ten and SEC are both down to take in a Florida State or Clemson, the problem is that, like you mentioned, both of these schools are going to have to pay the ACC to get out. And then in order to get into the Big Ten or the SEC, they're going to have to take less money than the rest of the schools are getting, which is probably going to be less than they were going to be making in the ACC, which just changed its revenue stream model to be based a little bit more on performance. So if you finish in the top in football and basketball, you get some money, more money than the rest of the teams. Not a lot, but enough to make some differences. So the real question becomes, like, can Florida State and Clemson wait out the ACC revenue issues? And the problem is that I don't see where the ACC is going to have major revenue struggles, because their teams continue to do well enough in basketball to get large shares of the tournament prize money. So basketball, even though the basketball hasn't been as good as it's been, we just had an ACC team in the Final Four, which means that they get the largest chunk that you can potentially get. When you look at football, an ACC team is going to be guaranteed a top four playoff spot for the next 2 years, which means that they're going to get into the next round. They're going to have a good shot at making the semifinals, which means they're going to get multiple games of revenue from that. Mm-hmm. Like, at this point, Clemson and Florida State are basically sitting here saying we can't compete. And yet the ACC is still competing and making money primarily thanks to Florida State and Clemson.
Facts.
And so as a college program, you can't tank. And so the question, and so I just don't see the leverage here. Now, all this is to be said, like, Super League happens, this whole thing blows up.
Yeah.
The ACC still would, under the grant of rights, control their TV rights and their TV revenue.
It's like 2031, right? It's 2031. Yes. Yeah.
So Big G, I think you and I are both agreed here. This feels more like Florida State and Clemson signaling to the world, look, ACC is done. We are out of the ACC as soon as we can afford it, whether it's the Super League, whether it's the Big Ten, whether it's the SEC. But I'm just curious from, like, your perspective here. Like, when you look at, you know, what I think Florida State's better positioned for a post-ACC world than a Clemson is right now. Like, what Florida State has done with NIL especially and the transfer portal, Clemson is still lagging back there. And I don't know if Clemson wants to know what it looks like outside of the ACC. I think Florida State can handle their stuff. I don't know if Clemson can.
Well, I mean, that's listen. So people know that, you know, I don't rock with Dabo like that. I don't hate Dabo and I don't hate on Dabo. But Dabo is the oldest school traditionalist coach. You're going to come to Clemson because it's Clemson. You know, we're not going to do progressive stuff. We don't believe in NIL. We definitely don't believe in a transfer portal, because I ain't seen a guy yet hit the portal from Clemson. I've seen guys leave, but I ain't seen a player hit over in Clemson. So Dabo's, he's the face of the franchise. So if I would see Clemson get off of Dabo this year because Clemson didn't have the season that they projected, and say for some strange reason, they win 9 games or 8 games and they don't make the playoff, and then they bring in a big-time, big-tier coach to solidify and move towards the progressive, I can see the move moving faster. But as of right now, I think the ACC is saying, these are the two flagship schools that we have, so we're going to try to market and sell our product. Because remember, Andy, they had the Magnificent Seven that was supposed to have all got together and, like, okay, like, we're going to come together as a pack and go challenge this, but it never materialized based on the fact of those other schools couldn't put up the revenue that a Florida State and a Clemson could put up concerning TV share. Because you know as well as I do, When was the last time you saw a Saturday that you didn't see Clemson or Florida State on TV?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just being blunt. If you go to ESPN, Fox, NBC, or ABC, when was the last Saturday you didn't see one of those two teams playing? Now, you might not get anybody else in the ACC. You know, you might not get a North Carolina, Virginia Tech, or Virginia. Nah. Their other share is Notre Dame. And they've been trying to, like, that's who they push out there as far as, like, okay, ND represents us as far as the ACC. But, nah, teams ain't tuning in to watch. But they're going to watch Florida State, and they're going to watch Clemson. So I'm saying all that to say that I agree with what you're saying, that they're like, okay, we went out of the party, but from a revenue share, we can't do it. But, Andy, this is my thinking. I'm thinking that the SEC will fit the bill. If they knew, because think about it. The lure of the SEC is we're landlocked. All of our schools touch. You know, all the way we can go as far west as Texas. We can go far east as Florida and Georgia, South Carolina up the coastline. So we lock Clemson in. Clemson and South Carolina is the flagship. Florida and Florida State's and we're landlocked. So I think because of that lure, under no circumstances does the SEC want Florida State and Clemson to join the Big Ten. That's why I think that they give up the money up front to help them, like, pay the bill to get out. Because they know if the Big Ten's able to plant flags in the South, they're in trouble. So that's just my thinking, bro. I think that's why they're doing it, because this is a push for the SEC versus getting out.
Yeah, know? And I think that this is the interesting part about this whole thing, is because we have seen through conference realignment multiple occasions mm-hmm. where the reason that college football is different than professional football is because there are 100-year-old rivalries that are so deeply ingrained into the culture around certain programs.
That lead
to irrational decision making. So everything mm-hmm. that you said, 100% mm-hmm. logical, rational. I am sure that's what the SEC leaders are saying to the member schools. The problem is you've got that school in Gainesville and you got that school in Columbia, South Carolina that are going to sit there and say there is no way that we are letting this rival school move up and come in and get the fruits of our labor when we are especially when you're Florida and you're South Carolina and Clemson and Florida State in a worse conference making less money per year are out recruiting you and outperforming you on the football field. Mm. And I think that's where this, again, kind of going back to what I was talking about before, is why it's so, if you're Florida State and Clemson, you kind of shot yourself in the foot by being so successful. Because Florida's and South Carolina would probably feel differently if that rivalry was tilted in a different manner. But for both of those rivalries, Clemson has owned South Carolina in the Dabo years. And Florida has looked real bad against Florida State.
Trash.
Especially when we're talking about Florida probably having to go through a regime change this offseason. So this is going to be what's fascinating to me, is because at the end of the day, I agree. I think Clemson and Florida State should both be in the SEC. That is the most logically sounding next step here. The problem is that the entire SEC has to convince South Carolina and Florida to not block those moves. And I'm sure that, like, what's going to happen is that this year, that's going to be a really hard conversation to have, because you're going to see a Texas A&M really struggle now that Texas is in that same conference. And it's going to be a shining example of, like, look, this is what happens when you let your in-state rival enter the conference. Mm-hmm. You fall off the map. And Florida and South Carolina are going to want something if they are going to let those two schools in. And I don't know I think it's going to be a very fascinating political game that's going to take place as these negotiations happen, while simultaneously Clemson and Florida State are trying to haggle with the ACC. What is the number that we have to pay? Because you're right. Like, that's what they're looking for. They're looking for a three-digit number that says, how many millions do we have to pay to get out of this deal?
Yeah. Andy, I'm going to tell you, because how we put the stuff out there with the Juice Adamus and the rumors, bro. I'm gonna tell you something, man, that I heard, and my source is for real on this one, right? I think that it's a done deal that Clemson and Florida State is going to join the Big Ten. And I think Notre Dame's the third team. And I think they're trying to figure out who the fourth team is. And the bye year is to see how the expansion looks this year with USC, Oregon, Washington, and UCLA. If those teams come in and all those teams are 6-6 and above, where they're bowl eligible and they generate that money off the bowls and then they send four of them to the playoff, oh, yeah. No, I think that they're going to – the Big Ten is going to look and say, okay, Notre Dame, Florida State, Clemson. Who's the other one? Who's the other one that we pull out of the ACC and we say, we don't care what nobody else. We'll help pay them out. We're going to help. Because the revenue that they're going to generate, you got to remember, the Big Ten is ramping up for a TV deal. Like as soon as Notre Dame's done, like, we already done hooked the deal with CBS, right? So they're going to look for not the deal that they're going into, but the one that's after that. The Big Ten wants to get the biggest television deal in the history of sports. So I'm looking for the Big Ten to do something bananas like that because they have to get in front of the SEC. There's long bread down there. Georgia, Texas, Bama, they got big bread. So you got to do something that's just going to make impact on college football like you've never seen. So what I'm hearing is, Florida State, Clemson, Notre Dame, we're going to pick one more. I don't know who that other ACC school is going to be, but, you know, I got my thoughts, but not to say for sure, but I think them three for sure, Andy. Your thoughts on that, bro?
No, I think that the Big Ten would be well served to add Florida State and Clemson, especially if it's going to be an arms race against the SEC. But the wild card in this whole thing is the Big 12. Mm-hmm. The Big 12 is going to get its first year of its new TV deal this upcoming season. It's going to start. We're going to see what the Big 12 looks like with its new conference where I think this is why I say the Big 12 is the one to watch out for.
Mm-hmm.
The Big 12 has a very good conference. Top to bottom, it is very even.
Competitive.
Yes, competitive is the perfect word for it. Mm-hmm. But it's right now, it's really lacking that signature program. Losing Red River, it lost its like top tier. This is what you know us for.
Yeah.
And so if you're the Big 12, you could go to Florida State and Clemson and say, look, guys, we are willing to make you our crown jewel. Like, we are willing to start and end every Big 12 ad with Clemson and Florida State in those commercials. We are willing to put you, like, you can go, like, right now in the ACC, you guys are top of the league. We won't change that at all. You go to the Big 10, you guys are middle of the pack. You go to the SEC, you are middle bottom of that pack. You come to us, nothing changes in terms of your perception. We'll give you our best Big 12 games every week, and you get a little bit extra money. It's not SEC money, it's not Big 10 money, but the gap is significantly different. And I think that the reason that could happen is because right now, Big G, to your point, ESPN is footing the bill for the entire ACC. On the Big 12 side, you've got Fox on there saying, like, look, we would really like to not get locked out of this next deal. If the Clemson and Florida State go to Big 10, we don't want to be locked out, locked out of those games. So I think that there is an opportunity here for the Big 12 to kind of swoop in at the last minute and make something happen. So, but again, the Big 12 doesn't have the money to pay the exit fees. So again, that's the only reason why I'm saying like that's not locked in. The Big 12 is definitively saying like we're not going to foot the bill. If you guys get out, we will give you everything you want, but you guys got to figure out how to get out on your own.
Yeah, in my mind, I'm like, okay, Michigan, Ohio State, Georgia, Alabama, Clemson, Florida State. Yeah, that makes sense. And they got the ticket. They got the bill for it. That makes a lot of sense. But because Andy, later on the show next week, we're going to talk about having rematches and teams playing two and three times in the same freaking season. That's going to be a big topic next week for the show. But right now, it's going to be those rivalries that you sell and you sell your market with. So yeah, I agree. Okay, listen, we got another topic. We're going to move to that, skip a commercial. We're going to come to one in a second, but we're going to do this next topic, right? The way too early preseason, Andy. way too early preseason rankings. Listen, PFF, all the betting rings, all. I saw a thing the other day where they said Ohio State is 41.6% chance of winning the national championship, and we ain't even got our spring ball yet. These preseason rankings, to me, though, they mean something. Because where there's smoke, there's fire. And you can tell what's going on with a program. So we know that based on the first topic we talked about, how bananas it's going to get, because guess what? The portal's coming up again. But with these spring rankings, man, do you buy into them, Andy? Or are you saying, man, I don't know. Maybe it's just too early. I want to get your thoughts on the way too early top 25 ranking, man.
Right now, with the way that the transfer portal is working, I don't put a lot of stock in them until after spring ball. Because I think one of the nice things about college spring ball that's very different than the early, like when NFL's training camp rolls around, I do not get excited. Like these guys are professionals. They've been working out all season. This is more of a formality. This is about bonding. This is about instilling team culture.
Yeah.
In college, spring ball is a really unique opportunity because of the rules that exist around the college sport to put guys in competitive situations and to really kind of see how much growth has taken place with certain players and certain positions. So like an example, and this is the fun part about spring ball too, is that like, again, all this is taking place behind the scenes. So you got to look at things on like social media. You got to look in and see some things. But I'm taking a look at like Syracuse. That's one that's close to my heart. That's the one following. New coaching staff comes in, Fran Brown from the SEC. I'm looking at the footage. I'm looking at the drills that they're running. And all of a sudden, you got guys on the 2D that look like they've gained 20 pounds of muscle.
Big fact.
And then you remember like, oh yeah, some of these kids are 19, 20 years old. They're still growing. They are not done yet. And spring ball gives you that opportunity to see like, okay, how much has things changed? So I think evaluating college top 25 rankings before you've had that look at a lot of programs and a lot of rosters to see what's changed, to see which position battles might be coming up later on in fall ball. I think that is when you can start paying attention to the rankings and be like, okay, there's something here. Before spring ball, I'm just like, there's too many unknowns that are happening, especially like roster spots 25 to 45. That's the difference between a good team and a great team. And that's what coaches are looking at in spring ball. So I'd rather wait until after that evaluation period has taken place before I start putting stock into too many of these rankings.
Correct. Andy, I don't disagree at all. And the reason I say that is because like right now, the Ohio State Buckeyes are preseason ranked number one. They haven't named their starting quarterback yet. How can a team, I don't care. I mean, they got the talent. Don't get me wrong. You ain't got your starting quarterback. You don't deserve to be number one. There's no way to where you have teams like Georgia, teams like Texas, teams like Oregon, teams like Ole Miss, who's bringing a whole, Missouri, bringing a whole squad back, Penn State. And they got their starting quarterback. So I don't buy into it as much. But what I like to see out of the preseason or way too early top 25 rankings based on spring is the fact that they value, like how you said, that 25 through 45 depth on the roster. Because guess what, ladies and gentlemen? Teams are going to hit the portal. Teams, after spring, I'm telling you right now, like I told you, we started out. Dallin Hayden, he's already gone. Dallin's going to go to somewhere and start running back, or he's going to split. If he goes to Michigan, he's splitting with Edwards. And they got the 1-2 punch all over again. And I'm telling you right now, Tony Alford done made a deal with that guy. Because by the way, if you don't know, Tony Alford left Ohio State to go to Michigan to be the running back coach, and they brought the Oregon running back coach into Ohio State to go with Chip Kelly. So I'm telling you, you're going to see other guys leave out of programs like Ohio State, like Georgia, like Alabama. You're going to see guys cut out and go to other teams. And then now, okay, my second-tier roster, but some of those teams only need like one or two guys to plug and play. And now you go from 7-5 to 9-3.
Yeah.
10-2 because you picked up 2-3 guys out the portal. So that's my thinking, Andy. You think that's correct?
Yeah, I think because the challenge right now is that there is a reality, and like this sucks, but it's true. Like, look, spring ball can happen, and a guy who was supposed to be the backup gets passed by that 18-year-old lanky kid that they brought in as like an athlete tweener guy who all of a sudden like hit the weight room for a year, has been sitting back doing all the film, doing all the things that he needs to do, and bam, this kid's second on the depth chart now. And like you see it in spring ball. And so I think that this is, I don't think the portal has really changed this, because this was happening anyways. You know, coaches had ways of getting scholarship guys who weren't going to play off of the team. It just, you know, happened in a lot. There wasn't enough, wasn't a whole lot of announcement. There wasn't tracking around it. So I think that this is all just kind of part of the system. And I think that you hit the nail on the head. Like, look, some teams need to have 45 guys deep because of injuries. Like, this is a violent sport. This is a sport where injuries are going to happen. You need to make sure that that second team is as good as the first team if you're going to be a national title contender. And spring ball is how you figure that out. There are other teams, and this is where the portal has changed things, that, you know what, we're never going to have that 45-man depth. Let's get the best available guy and try to come up with a 22 to 25 person roster that is top tier. And if everything breaks right, we're a 10 win team. If it doesn't break right, we're a 6-win team. Like that's the difference that we're seeing here, is that instead of all the talent getting hoarded at the top, some of that top end talent is going down to other schools. And it makes things more interesting. But again, we're getting into, like, the ACC had some of its first spring games. There's a lot more spring games that are taking place this weekend
on national TV.
Yeah. Hit me up in a month. And then those top 25 rankings, those ones I'll start buying a little bit more into and start saying, like, yeah, I think that this is a better representation of where college football is at right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause like I said, even like a guy like Dallin Hayden, what if he goes to Tennessee and plays with Nico?
Yeah, that's huge.
In Michigan, the thing's always been he can't pass pro. He can't block and pass pro. So, but if he goes to Michigan where he don't have to do, because they run the ball 70% of the time. I mean, there's too many variables to put stock in your preseason, but it's giving a signal to saying this is more about the betting.
Yeah.
Where these guys are at, you know. That's just my thoughts, bro. All right, so Andy, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We're going to get another word from our partners on Fans First Sports Network, Level Up College Football Podcast. We got a couple of subjects once we come back. Give us a pause if you're listening on Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, and or Spotify. We'll be right back with the Level Up Podcast on Fans First Sports Network. And we're back with the Level Up College Football Podcast. Andy P, Big G in the building. Andy, we've had a great show so far. We got a couple of subjects, and we're going to close the door and close it up. So, but what's up? Even before I say that, man, how you been, man? I was concerned and worried. I'm glad you're feeling better. But I just need you to tell our listening audience that you're doing well, man, because they was worried, bro.
Yeah, man. We just the worst part is that when you're a podcaster and you get anything that impacts the throat, the coughing, man, that's you're out. You know, it's like a pitcher with a hand injury. You know, it's a very specialized set of things that we do here. And if you get sick there, you're done for. So I'm back on the mend, got the meds, you know, and ready for spring, and ready for us to talk about some actual football here instead of how college football is going to change off the field. I'm ready to talk about the on the field stuff.
Absolutely, bro. So that brings us to our topic, man. Who you like for the breakout players off the top 25 teams or the spring ball? Who you got ears to the ground? Who you listening to, man? Who you saying is going to be, man, like, this kid is going to change the landscape of college football, man. I got about 2-3 guys that I'm looking at. But I just want to hear your early thoughts about some players that they might have been no names last year, but then, you know, going into this year, hey, they're going to do. Who you like, Andy? Who you like?
Well, one of the guys that I'm going to focus on is on the defensive side of the ball, which I know is kind of not everybody's favorite part. But we've seen in the last few years, the very best teams, the ones that have gone from, you know, a one loss or a two loss team to an undefeated team, have a like NFL caliber game breaking middle linebacker on defense. Like, that has become one of the most important positions in college football, because it's really tough on the defensive side of the ball to have a singular position of impact across the entire field. But with how college football has gone, the middle linebacker, especially if they're at that NFL level, can impact so many different things that the other team does. And I think we saw this past season, this was a year where nobody really had that at the top level. Like we saw Michigan was a holistic defense and had some great, had just great guys along the trenches, but it didn't have that impact middle linebacker. Georgia is a team that I think holistically is going to be very, very good. But Ohio State, Oregon, Texas all kind of line up man to a man with Georgia in terms of the starting level of talent. Georgia's deeper than all those schools, but nobody is outclassed by Georgia in the starting 11 on either side of the ball. And this is where I think that Raylan Wilson is going to be the guy to watch. He was a five-star blue chip guy coming out of Tallahassee, was obviously looked at for Florida State, was obviously looked at by everybody in the South. And he was an all SEC all freshman his first year and then popped his ACL this past year. And so the reason I think that you got to watch him is that the ACL injuries, guys come back from it, but do they come back better from an ACL injury? We know that can sap you of explosiveness. We know that can sap you of a lot of certain qualities that you need at that position. I think Wilson will come back and be a starting linebacker and will be a very good linebacker. But he had the potential to be a guy that is taken in the first five names of the NFL draft.
Yes.
And if he is that guy for Georgia this year, that is the difference between Georgia and everybody else in the top five. And so for me, I think that this is somebody that, like, let's see how he looks in spring ball. I want to see the explosiveness. I want to see him diving through gaps on run plays. I want to see him be able to get to the quarterback when he's sent on pass rushes. But I also want to see how he handles pass coverage as well. Like, that is such a mental side of the game that he has had a year to work on and understand how to read the quarterbacks. Let's see if he can, because if that explosiveness is gone, that side of his game needs to pick up the slack. So he is somebody who I think, like, that is somebody who can shift the national title conversation because of what that position means to Georgia. And so he is number one for me. When we're talking about breakout guys, like let's see what he's got coming back from that type of injury in that type of role on Georgia.
So Andy, I got three guys, but I'm gonna give you my preference. Number one guy. And you already know who this guy's name is.
Okay.
But I'm telling you, this kid has changed his body. I got feet on the ground. What's going on? And this is a kid that's not played in college, that's already played in college football. But I'm hearing some stuff. And I think there's going to be a big push for this kid to win the Heisman Trophy. Travis Hunter, wide receiver / cornerback, University of Colorado. From what I'm hearing, he's gained 9 pounds, almost 10 pounds. I'm also hearing that he's changed his core and that Deion is going to do him really as close to the Charles Woodson campaign that they tried last year. The deal was he played too many snaps. They've recruited a freshman wide receiver, Phenom, number 10, and the kid's a beast. So he's going to cut down on Travis's snaps offensively, but defensively, Travis is about to lock it down on the corner. I think Deion's push is to get Travis a top five pick in this year's upcoming NFL draft. He knows what Shador can do. The nation doesn't know necessarily what Travis can do. And I'm really thinking and believing, man, that the Colorado Buffaloes are going to push with Travis Hunter like you've never seen. They're fixing the trenches. They got a couple of dog freshman offensive linemen too, by the way. I seen footage and I was like, oh my God. So I like the change with Travis Hunter. I think that Travis Hunter legitimately is a top five Heisman contender today. Right now, today. Legitimately, Travis Hunter. You got a second guy, Andy?
Yeah, he's not on the top 25. So that is, I'm going to say this, but it's somebody who's at Syracuse who I think could really shape the Orange going from this unranked team to the sleeper in the ACC that everybody thinks. And the reason I'm saying this guy is because we saw him last year at an SEC program.
Yeah.
And he struggled. And Deuce Chestnut came in, played as a freshman, all ACC freshman at corner, transfers down to LSU, got really exposed down there at the cornerback position. Now, what I have seen and what they put up on social is that Deuce has done a lot of what you were talking about with Trap, with what Hunter has done. The core looks completely different. The body type, a lot more strength, a lot more emphasis put on this part of the body. That's that center part, just from the shoulders all the way down through the core, looks like a different player.
Yeah.
Now, what I have heard, and I think what has been shown in a few clips put on social media, is that he is not going to be a corner. They are moving him to safety.
Yeah.
And they're going to have him playing around in the safety position, potentially a roving type, like, you know, free. Like, they used to play a 3-3-5. It's unclear if they're keeping the 3-3-5 moving forward. I think they're going to move to a more traditional 4-3 setup. But having Deuce as a safety, I think, is this opportunity to have more of a game-breaking, hard-hitting guy in the back there that can really be disruptive in the passing game. And so we know what Elijah Robinson can do when coaching up the front seven. Yeah. I think Syracuse's front seven is going to be very strong. The question is, like, what's going to be on the back end there? And moving Deuce out of the cornerback spot, moving him into the safety to kind of be the guy, the last realm of defense, cut down on a lot of those deep passes. I think that he is somebody who is going to play his way into an all ACC first team level, because we knew he had that potential, but he needed to change his body. He needed to change his positioning. Fran Brown is an excellent defensive backs coach. He's working with the guys one-on-one in that section.
Yeah.
I think that that's a name that in the ACC, when we're talking about Syracuse being good this year, Deuce is going to be somebody who's going to finally live up to that potential that he's had, but just kind of lost it along the way and needed a new scene, needed a new position to kind of unlock everything that he can be.
Listen, the people that are listening to us on audio, y'all don't need to sleep on Syracuse. I'm bold predicting right now. Syracuse going at least 8 games.
Yeah.
Syracuse is going to win at least 8 football games this season. And I wouldn't be shocked if they had 9 or 10 wins. I would not be shocked at all, that because of the schedule and the enhancement in the coaching. And they hit the portal hard this offseason, and they got a lot of SEC caliber players. The deal's going to be, can Kyle McCord go over there and compete? That's going to be the deal at quarterback. Mm-hmm. Andy, I got one more dude, man.
Yeah.
Because I can't get off the show without talking about him. I've been talking about him on every platform I'm on. Jeremiah Smith is unbelievable. I mean, I'm not just saying it because it's Buckeye bias. He's unbelievable. Like, they didn't have a scrimmage Saturday. It was supposed to, right? But I heard about what happened in the practices on Friday and Saturday. It was a semi scrimmage. He destroyed them. He destroyed them. They have 2 first-round NFL draft picks at corner. David Espinosa and Denzel Burke, and they couldn't stop him. They couldn't stop him. 6'3" and a third. 217 pounds. And let me preface this too, Andy. He's supposed to be a high school senior this year. He classed up. So he's 17 years old. He runs a 4.35 40-yard dash. And all the footage that's out there on the internet, he's Randy Moss and everybody. He's got a 45-inch vertical jump, bro. He's a freaky athlete. Like, he was the fastest black stripe, because we haven't been on the podcast talking about black stripes. He lost his black stripe in 4 practices. It's never been done. I mean, all the way back to the Urban Meyer era. And he's already going to push and take somebody's spot. I think you're going to run out Carnell Tate, Ennis, and him. And I think Abuka is going to play behind Ennis and play running back. He's going to be like a Xavier Johnson guy. Because the kid is really that big. He's really that fast. If for all the other people that's listening to us, go and look at his – go look at the – go just go look and see what he's been doing. And that's not without, that's without an elite, elite ball placement quarterback in spring. Yeah. Devin Brown's trying to figure it out. Will Howard's trying to figure it out. Julian Sand, who I think is the best out of all of them, is a true freshman. I don't think they're going to run a freshman out there. But Jeremiah Smith, them South Florida boys are different.
Yeah.
Ennis, Tate, and Jeremiah Smith makes Ennis and Tate look trash. And Ennis and Tate are going to be first-round picks. They're going to be first-round picks. That's how good this kid is, man. Listen, that could be big bias. People could call me biased. But I'm telling you right now, he's going to be the best receiver that ever played at Ohio State University. Ever. This kid is Michael Thomas's body, Joey Galloway's speed, and foot with Chris Carter's hands. That's who he is. And he's 17. He should have been a high school senior this year. And it's unbelievable. I have never seen people rant and rave like how they're ranting and raving over this. They're like Marvin who? Who's Marv? Yeah, Marv who? Who is that? You know, and that's unheard of. But Andy, I don't know if you knew, bro. I don't know if you knew about Jeremiah.
I mean, the catch that went around on social media, man, that is, he's got all the things that you want to see, and the age just makes you project in a way that it's like, how was this guy, like, he went to Ohio State, it's a big school, but how is this guy not talked about in the way that, like, generational recruits are talked about? Because he is somebody, and, like, we've seen it more and more now, like, a wide receiver can carry you in a way that they never could before. And he's the guy that can potentially do that for Ohio State this year, even if they don't have a great quarterback.
Yeah. I just can't get enough of this kid. I mean, and listen, it's not like they got – listen, the start – so, by the way, too, Ohio State's going to run a 5-1-5 defense that's never been heard of before in college football this year. They're going to move C.J. Hicks down, have five guys, and be able to drop either JTT or Sawyer in the slot, in the little slot areas. Run one middle linebacker with Sonny Styles and five DBs. Out of their five DBs, Caleb Downs, first-round NFL draft pick. Jordan Hancock, second and third-round draft pick. David Espinosa, first round. Jordan Matthews, first and second round. Denzel Burke, top 15 pick. And this kid is killing that defense. He's killing that defense. They can't do nothing. They can't stop him in practice. It's been shown. And like, they're out there hitting him, putting hands on him, and they're like, what? Where did he come out of? Where did they create him? This kid's from a laboratory. So, listen, I'm telling you, I'm going to be on Jeremiah Smith for real, for real. And listen, dark horse favorite for a Heisman. As a freshman. Now, that might be biased, but dark horse. I'm telling you, man, this kid is different. He's different. So Andy, look, one last question before we get off the pod. One last question. If you had to pick your top three all time or best college coaches today and today's college football landscape, who you got 1, 2, 3? I need to know that before we get out of here.
Yeah. I was thinking about this ever since you said it in the pre-show, because it's like, now that Saban's not here, like, who is it? Like, you know, that's always been the thing, is that so many great coaches have moved on out of the sport. And I think number one right now, it's Kirby. Kirby is clearly Saban light. Ooh. Like, Kirby, ooh, Kirby's kind of the guy that I think is not going to have the Saban peak. Like, I don't think anybody's going to replicate what Saban did, but I think Kirby's going to be the closest thing that we're going to have to it in a while. My number two guy, I know this is probably like a hot takey guy right now, but what Norvell has done at Memphis, which is a really hard program to get off the ground and win, as we're seeing now that he's not there anymore. And the fact that he was able to wrangle in the mess that was Florida State and almost immediately get them back into the playoff picture. I think that is a guy who's not getting a lot of credit. But he's clearly paid well enough. Like, he's going to be a very well-paid coach for a very long time. And I think that's somebody who I really like. The number three guy, I have not been the biggest Coach Prime fan in the world. I've always been a little bit soft on him. Thought that a lot of what he was doing was a lot of talk. But I've seen, maybe this is, again, a little bit of bias of seeing what's going on this week, like all the videos that have come up about like what's been going on in the Colorado and how he's handled things.
Yeah,
I think that he's doing, I think that he is somebody who is able to leverage his celebrity in a way that no other coach has been able to. The fact that he is talking to these kids and saying like, look, most of you guys aren't going to be pros. This is still college football. There's still a level of this. And we saw that Colorado team was up and down, but they've rebuilt in an interesting way. Like you talked about earlier. Do I think that he's tactically as sharp as some of these other guys? No, but he did, unlike a lot of the other guys that I want to put at number three, he's won something in college sports. He won at the HBCU level. He proved that he can build a program. He can recruit talent. He proved that he can take that talent over to Colorado and he could generate hype around a program. He can do all the things. This is the year where I need to see him win. If he gets Colorado back to a bowl game, cemented top three coach for me right now. And I think that that is where, you know, Afton brought up Ryan Day. I love Ryan Day.
He's not top three.
The Michigan stuff, man. Like you know, you got to win one game. You got to win that game for me to go in the top three. Maybe this is the year. I think if Ryan Day wins a national title this year, my top three is really easily Norvell, Kirby Smart, and Ryan Day. That's it. But Day's got to win the title this year for him to be in my top three.
Andy, I love your top three, but I got a guy that I don't care who you take out of the three. But I got to add this guy in there. I think that Dan Lanning, the Oregon coach, is a top three coach. And you're going to see it more than ever this season.
Yeah.
Because he's going to lose Jackson Powers Johnson. He's going to use that Jackson kid off a corner. He's going to lose Franklin, the wide receiver. He lost to Bo Nix, who's going to be a first-round NFL draft pick. And watch how they restock. Oregon is the most dangerous team. Yeah, Oregon is the most dangerous team in the Big Ten, and it's not by accident.
Yeah.
So I have to put – I'll put Dan Lanning in front of Lincoln Riley and Ryan Day. As far as Big Ten coaches, I'm going Dan Lanning number one.
Well, Big G, say Ryan Day decides to walk away from college football right now. Ohio State, unlimited bucket, unlimited money to pay whoever they want. They can poach whoever they want. Yeah. Ryan Day or Dan Lanning is the number one guy that I would have right now to start my program with, period. I think he is the next guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely, man. Like I said, I'm a Buckeye till I die, but I recognize talent. Game recognized game. And Dan Lanning is that guy, bro. Dan Lanning is that guy. You know, it's not by accident that they picking off Oregon guys to come to Ohio State. Chip Kelly, the running back coach. That ain't by accident. So I understand. I understand what time it is. All right, Andy, we're to the show. We're to the end of the Level Up podcast. We thank everybody to rock with us in the live chat. Andy, you got any closing shots, parting shots before we get out of here, when we close out?
You know, it's College Football Super League. Bring it on. Bring on whatever it is. We're still going to be here talking about it, man, no matter what. Going to watch college football no matter when it is.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I don't disagree. Big spring games coming up. You got the Buckeye spring game, national televised. Michigan's game, national televised. Texas games, national televised. And I heard Georgia's game's going to be national televised too. So this is crazy that the spring games are going to be on TV. And those, they're really for the fans. But once again, we thank all you guys for listening to us and rocking with us on Fans First Sports Network, Level Up College Football Podcast. As for Big G and my boy Andy P, who's feeling great and back in the building, we'll catch all you guys next week on the pod. We'll holler at y'all. Peace.